From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For a little more than a year now, Vernal, Utah has been receiving national attention because of its air pollution. It began with the claims of Donna Young, a midwife in the city, who says she started to notice an alarming increase in miscarriages and stillbirths in 2013. Young and some advocacy groups believe the infant deaths are related to the bad air brought on by the oil and gas industry in the region. And they raised their concerns with the State Department of Health, which conducted a study of infant death records in the region, but couldn't find a connection, a causal link. And other researchers say it's irresponsible to suggest there is one. Earlier this month, a reporter for Rolling Stone magazine joined us to explain why he doesn't think the matter has been settled, and we're hearing from the other side of the story today. We invite you to join us after the news.
Hey, I'm Elaine Clark, one of the producers for Radio West, inviting you to check out Video West. It's our online showcase of short documentaries about the places and people that make Utah what it is. You can stream the films at videowest.kuer.org. And if you like what you see and hear, we hope you'll share it with your friends. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Right around 2013, Donna Young, a midwife in Vernal, Utah, started taking note of what she believed to be an alarming increase in miscarriages and stillbirths in the area. She did some amateur sleuthing and brought her conclusions to others, advocacy groups, some journalists. Young couldn't back up her contention that the infant mortality was directly related to air pollution caused by oil and gas development in the region, so she and others asked the state to look into it. And health department officials did. They conducted a study in the region of infant death records. But they couldn't confirm what Donna Young believed was going on. The state did acknowledge the air is bad in Vernal, but it couldn't find a connection, a causal link. And other researchers are saying it's irresponsible to suggest that there is one. Earlier this month, a reporter for Rolling Stone magazine joined us to explain why he doesn't think the matter has been settled. He says the study was flawed, that state health officials don't want to disrupt the oil and gas industry, and that even if there isn't a direct link yet, there is still enough reason to be concerned about the air in Vernal. We're hearing from the other side of the story today, and we invite you to join us if you like. If you have your own comments or questions, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll begin today with Seth Lyman, who is a researcher and an air quality expert who has co-authored a study of air quality in the Uinta Basin. He's also the executive director of the Bingham Entrepreneurship and Energy Research Center at Utah State University's Uinta Basin campus. And Seth Lyman is joining us today from his office in Vernal. And Seth Lyman, welcome. Thanks very much for doing this.
Thank you.
Well, let's begin with the work that you've been doing in the region. Can you give us a basic sense of the air? And I mean, we'll get into the particulars as we go. The air in Vernal and Uinta Basin generally, I suppose it's kind of like Salt Lake, similar geographic sort of things going on, and it's bad at times.
That's right. The meteorology, the inversions that lead to bad air, especially in the wintertime in the Uinta Basin, tend to be actually stronger or worse than in Salt Lake City, so we have a higher propensity or higher ability to trap pollutants close to the ground. But when Salt Lake City has winter pollution episodes, we tend to have winter pollution episodes as well. We tend not to have pollution episodes in the summertime as experienced in Salt Lake City, but our air pollution exceedances, especially for ozone and particulate matter, are really confined to winter months and just winters where there's snow on the ground and plenty of high pressure. We actually haven't had an air quality exceedance or an exceedance of an EPA health standard in about a year and a half, mostly because this last winter was so warm and dry.
Yeah.
But when the inversions set in, the air pollution can be fairly severe. Ozone concentrations can be at a level high enough to where even people who are normally healthy can experience impacts from it. Particulate pollution, the haze that you can see, tends to be about half as much as Salt Lake City, but still above EPA health standards during those episodes.
Yeah. The ozone in winter in Vernal can be like Los Angeles bad.
Yeah, it has been in some years. The winter 2013 was the worst winter we've experienced, and the EPA metric for kind of categorizing years in terms of their ozone levels is the fourth highest 8-hour average value, and for vernal that's 102 parts per billion, and fairly similar to what is often experienced in Los Angeles.
Do you think in some way that 2013 was really bad, as you say, and this is when Donna Young and others started noticing this spike, this which some say is an anomaly, some say is a trend, and we'll get to that as we go, but you've been a little dismayed or at least mystified why this is still a story. Explain what you mean.
Yeah, well, I certainly accept and believe all of the science that shows that air pollution is harmful to health. That's why I have a job. That's what I do. So that isn't surprising that people are concerned about air quality, and they should be, and I am as well. And we're working with industry, with regulators, with politicians, with the Ute Indian tribe, and with the public as well to help people understand the issue, to provide information to help solve the issue, because it matters to health. The thing that's where I think some of the media reports and things have gone too far is in specifically blaming certain health outcomes, especially birth outcomes, on air quality. We know that air pollution, not so much ozone, there's not very good evidence that ozone pollution leads to negative birth outcomes like stillbirth, but particulate pollution, there's fairly solid evidence for that. Yeah. And so I'm not disputing that either, that air pollution does impact fetal and infant health. But those impacts are relatively small relative to whether the mother smokes or whether the mother has good health insurance and visits the doctor regularly and things like that. And so there's so much other noise in what's going on that the impacts of air pollution on those birth outcomes can be hard to see. Yeah. Statistically. There's a lot of noise, and it's hard to see the signal above that noise. And you can see it clearly in large populations like Los Angeles. We only have 50,000 people in the Uinta Basin, and our group actually did a study, just kind of a preliminary look at asthma data from Ashley Regional Medical Center in Vernal here, and looked at asthma-related hospital admissions. Asthma impacts of air quality on asthma are usually easy to see and detect, and actually asthma-related hospital admissions were lower in the winter than in the summer. We don't take that to mean that there's not an impact of air quality on asthma, just that there's a lot of other things going on, and so in a population as small as ours, it's hard to tease that out statistically. So what that means is not that air pollution isn't impacting fetal and infant health and other health parameters, just that those impacts are relatively small, and so the idea of a stillbirth epidemic here is really kind of outside of the realm of good science or what we know about air pollution's impacts.
Is there something particularly unique or special about the people who live in Vernal that might be in some way different from the state at large? Like, has the extraction industry brought people who could be higher risk for adverse birth outcomes? You know, are mothers in Vernal, for example, more inclined to smoke or more inclined to be exposed to secondhand smoke? Or do they tend to be younger or tend to be more overweight? Do we have any sense of that?
We do. That was part of the health department's study, and they showed that the smoke rates of maternal smoking and maternal obesity are both quite a bit higher than the Utah average. And there were a few other risk factors, too, that I can't recall off the top of my head. But we tend to be a higher health risk community than Utah at large, yeah.
One of the things that Paul Solitaroff, he was the Rolling Stone reporter we had on the program, he mentioned, I wanted to get you to respond to this, because he said this, and I'm going to quote him here. He said, "Epidemiologists show up 5 years late to the party," which is not to say that he was criticizing the science of epidemiology, but he and I think others seem frustrated with the actual pace of what it takes for science to make that direct causal connection. I mean, the arc of something like this takes years and years and lots of numbers and all of that. And I think he and others seem frustrated that that even though there's not a direct link, science can't find it, that something can't be done. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to respond to that.
Yeah, I in a sense, he's not wrong. I think science in general tends to be reactionary. Mm. When we see a problem, then we investigate it. And science is also really slow. The health department study took a year, and my research group has been here in the Uinta Basin for about 4 years. And we've learned a lot, but there's so much more we need to know in order to really make good decisions about what specific emission controls are needed and things like that to get our air pollution under control. So I understand that frustration, and I'm afraid I'm part of the source of it as a scientist myself. My worry then is that people like Paul and activists and things are pushing ahead so far that they're moving outside the realm of what we know. Yeah. and kind of just moving into insisting that their opinion must be right because they think it's right, rather than utilizing the data that we have. Like the health department study is fairly comprehensive, and it seems surprising to me that people wouldn't want to embrace that and take what we can from that to understand air quality or rather the health impacts. It didn't look specifically at air quality. It was looking at negative birth outcomes. But anyway, it provides information that we can use and probably shouldn't be dismissing, I don't think.
But that is one of the things that Paul Solotaroff and others have criticized, is that the state study was flawed in the sense that it didn't look at environmental factors, that that it didn't go looking for a link or a causal link or a problem, that meant it was limited in its scope and limited in its conclusions it could draw.
Yeah, I think there's truth to that. There's a couple reasons for that. One reason that, at least my opinion, and from what I think I've heard from the state, but I don't want to speak for them, the first step is to see if there is a problem. And right now, then the health department study shows that even in 2013, we did in 2013 have a higher rate of stillbirth than the state average, but it was still lower than the national average that year.
Right.
And other years, then it's been in line with the state average. And even that year where it was higher than the state average, it was within the realm of statistical insignificance, meaning that the most likely explanation is random chance for that so-called spike in stillbirths.
Right.
And so if there's not clear evidence that there's a health epidemic or crisis here, then it's not clear that there needs to be a particular follow-up study. I think the other reason is that, just like I mentioned with this little ozone analysis that we did, ozone and asthma, then there's not very many people here, and so it's really going to be hard, probably impossible, to ever see, to find that causal link through statistical data in our specific community. There's other studies out there, and the body of research is growing. There's a study in eastern
Colorado.
Sorry,
Seth. Why? Because it's so small?
Just because there's not enough people to achieve statistical significance.
Right.
Yeah, and there's so many other things going on, genetics and environment and habits, health habits of the individuals being studied and things like that, that the impact of air quality gets lost in that noise.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. Did you want to...
There's studies that use larger populations. There's one fairly recent in eastern Colorado showing that proximity to oil and gas wells does lead to an increase in negative birth outcomes.
Yeah.
The increase, like I say, is relatively small. Not that it's not important. Any increase is important. But with a larger population, then you can start to see that. Just looking at Vernal or even bringing in the whole Uinta Basin, it's going to be very difficult and probably impossible to ever find that link. So if there's a 10 ppb increase in ozone, we have this much increase in stillbirths or something like that.
I wondered, what you seem to be saying is that we can't find right now, and there's certain limitations about making a direct connection between oil and gas development in the Uinta Basin and these adverse birth outcomes. But what do you say about the impact on the region, on the air, of the oil and gas development industry? I mean, obviously you're saying they're having some effect on the on the bad air, of course, right?
Oh yeah, I think we know with certainty that the vast majority of the pollution that leads to high ozone, high particulate matter, and then we also have higher than normal levels of benzene and other organic compounds, that's mostly coming from the oil and gas industry, and that's the industry is accepting of that. They don't deny that, and it's not surprising when you think about it. You go to the Wasatch Front, and all you see is cars and freeways, and so it's not surprising that the majority of air pollution comes from cars on the Wasatch Front, and if you spend some time in the Uinta Basin, then you know that is what drives this area, is oil and gas development. And so because there's so much oil and gas and not very many people, then it tends to dominate the emissions inventory. Yeah, so when we have high ozone, then that is not, you know, there's vehicle traffic, there's a power plant out here, but we have fairly high confidence that without the oil and gas industry, we wouldn't have the high ozone and of course, not the organic compound pollution either. The particulate pollution is actually higher in cities than in the oil and gas area, and we think that's largely caused, or at least a good portion, maybe the majority, caused by urban pollution.
I'm not sure I should even ask you this next question because I'm not sure how much you want to weigh in on the matter of politics, but I do want to ask actually everyone this particular question because it's one of the things that Paul Solitaroff of Rolling Stone did point out, and it's a pretty strong allegation. He says that here's his direct quote, it's very difficult to get any reliable information out of the political apparatus in the state of Utah, which is to say that in Utah and in other states he mentions, this is true in Oklahoma, he says, in West Virginia and Colorado, there's a strong influence of the oil and gas industry. And so the state's not going to be motivated to look very closely at information that might be critical of the industry. Did you want to weigh in on that?
And I don't know how much I would have to say about it. I mean, hopefully then it seems maybe irresponsible to make accusations about basically falsifying data without any evidence. But everybody has conflicts of interest. We receive funding from Uinta County and other sources. We haven't received any funding from the oil and gas industry itself. But I mean, that same statement could be made maybe about Utah State University because we're part of the state. I guess one has to decide what to trust. I'm not sure there's a lot that can be said about that except maybe show me the evidence that something was done on purpose to hide the truth or something like that.
One of the things that you've pointed out is that sort of contrary to the concerns of some clean air activists who say the government isn't doing enough to regulate air pollution caused by industry, that in fact you've said standards and regulations are, it could be said, cracking down to some degree and that pollution could in fact go down in the region because of new standards.
Yeah. The EPA has come out with several kind of rafts of new standards for the oil and gas industry. The state of Utah just last year passed some new regulations for existing oil and gas wells and oil and gas activities. You're seeing a lot more scrutiny from land management agencies before they allow new oil and gas wells to come in. And we're seeing lots of voluntary action from the oil and gas industry because they see that the regulations are increasing and in some cases at least they may as well get ahead on it. So I think there are a lot of changes. We're doing a study now looking at for organic compounds in particular, to see if we can see whether they've changed over time and already started going down. It might be premature yet. So things are changing and a lot is happening. I think, though, that it's a long road, just like Wasatch Front air pollution. It'll probably be some years before the pollution is completely resolved or the problem is completely resolved.
What do you worry about most?
You mean in terms of the air pollution problem in general?
Yeah. Well, there in the Uinta Basin.
Yeah. I guess my perspective is as a scientist, and the regulatory clock is already ticking where EPA will declare the area to be out of attainment of the ozone standard. They're very likely to do that. And then when that happens, then more and more regulations are required. And the pace at which those regulations have to be implemented doesn't wait for the pace of science. And as we talked about, science moves slowly.
Yeah.
And so what our group worries about is and lots of other groups that are working on this problem, specifically in the Uinta Basin, is trying to come up with solutions, understand what's going on, so that then regulators and land management agencies can have good information to make those decisions as quickly as they need to.
That's Seth Lyman. He is the executive director of the Bingham Entrepreneurship and Energy Research Center at Utah State University's Uinta Basin campus. Joined us today from his office in Vernal, Utah. Seth Lyman, thanks for the time.
Oh, thank you, Doug.
801-585-WEST. Again, the number to join us, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are asking a question that's been raised recently. What is it that caused this spike in infant deaths in Vernal, Utah in 2013? Rolling Stone reporter Paul Solitaroff joined us earlier in the month to talk about his reporting on that question, and he made some pretty strong charges that the pollution from the oil and gas industry in the region is to blame and that the state may be looking the other way. We're hearing another perspective today on the program from those who say that those claims actually miss the mark, that while air pollution in the Uinta Basin is a problem, there's little evidence pointing to it as an infant mortality epidemic. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. With us on the program now is Bill Stringer. He's a Uinta County Commissioner, previously served as the head of the Bureau of Land Management's Vernal Office. And he was featured in Paul Solitaroff's article, among others. He's joining us today. Bill Stringer is from his office there in Vernal. And Bill Stringer, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Doug. Glad to be here.
So here is how Paul Solitaroff describes what he sees in Vernal, Utah. You've got this small town of some 10,000 people where the usual infant mortality rate is something like 2. And all of a sudden, there's 12 who die. And there's this large cluster of miscarriages taken note of by this midwife, as you know, Donna Young. Help us understand that, because as we've been hearing from Seth Lyman and others, it's just one of those spikes that's going to happen over time. We can't really explain it. But how do you see it?
Honestly, Doug, this is my experience with this has been through. I got the study, was able to review the study that came out, and I know it was a statistical analysis that. And I'm sure I caught the last part of Dr. Lyman's discussion. I go along to a very large degree with what he had to say, and that is. What we have here is a set of data that does not seem to it shows an anomalous number, but nothing that's outside of statistical significance. And part of that, to me, is the data was taken. We've got this information. I am not a statistician. I'm not a health expert, but the folks that put it together presented it. They didn't just say, here, take our word for it. They explained what they were comparing to, which is Utah, not the United States. They were comparing to what the Utah average is, so as the control. And one of the things that did come pretty clear to me was that even though there may have been a higher number in a given year, that it was still within statistical tolerance.
Right.
But the other part of it that really came clear, and this is something that does mean something to me as a county commissioner, is that the health statistics of the expectant mothers was significantly more risky than the Utah average. And I don't have the study in front of me. I just remember being struck by the example of the number of mothers who smoke or indulge in risky behavior was quite a bit higher in Uinta County or the Uinta Basin than it is in the state.
Yeah.
And in fact, up to double, I guess, the smoking occurrence. And I don't think anybody will disagree. I think we've known for some time that that's smoking during pregnancy has a very high possibility of affecting a fetus in utero. So I'm not trying to say that there's no way that based on that kind of data, I would end up saying, nope, completely debunked. But I guess I would say there's a lot more information or a lot more study that could be done to try and sort out exactly what is happening. But as Uinta County Commissioners, we certainly took the information from there, from that study to say, well, oil and gas notwithstanding, we've got some other challenges that are certainly putting infants, newborns, and fetuses at risk.
You know, some critics are going to say you're blaming the mothers for this, when in fact there's another factor that could be significant, and that is the influence of oil and gas, the oil and gas industry, which I don't think anyone questions is having an impact on the air there in the Uinta Basin. If you were to, I mean, how much of this is risky behaviors, as you put it, and how much of this is toxins released in the air by a very prominent industry in the region?
Well, I think that is what we have been trying to figure out now for, gosh, coming on 8 years, remembering that the BLM, when this all started, when I was with the BLM and I came to Vernal in, I think, 2003, we were doing a planning effort, land use planning, and one of the things that you do to support that is do surveys, do studies, take inventory. One of the things that we did as part of that was to do an air quality study, but it was a very rudimentary study. It was a what's called a near-field, far-field analysis, mostly aimed at industry and criteria pollutants, things like that. So there's always been this notion that we're trying to get a gauge of what is going on. But it became fairly clear that oil and gas was increasing in the Uinta Basin, and as probably the first BLM office, the Vernal office set about getting that one atmosphere model run, which would have included ozone and other things besides all the criteria pollutants. So there has been an effort underway since 2007 to do a better job of not only figuring out how much of what, but what the constituents really are, trying to figure out not only what they are, but where they're coming from. Mm. The studies do end up, those ozone-type models, the CAMEX and the CMAC, do a better job, even though they're rural models, are not rural models, they're urban models. They do better than anything we'd done before. But there was clearly this notion that we not only had to identify the sources of the precursors for ozone as well as all the other pollutants that there might be, but also what they were. The speciation was very important. So I think when you look and say, it just intuitively and realize that that's not what science is about. Science is about taking intuition and then verifying it.
Right.
If you were to say that, just looking at the study, my first thought would be this. If we had a spike in a given year, well, the activity levels were actually much higher in, 2005, 6, 7. The activity level in the basin was the highest it's ever been. It has been less since then for a variety of reasons, including technology, market forces, et cetera. So I guess what I would be thinking is
If you're going to see a spike, you'd see it then.
Well, there was clearly more activity at that point in time with what I would consider dirtier equipment at that point in time. Drill rigs were still what were called Tier 2.
Yeah.
We're moving out of that into the cleaner rigs. There were more rigs running because all the holes were vertical. There was not much directional drilling. There was not much pad drilling. So the same number of holes is being was drilled later in the decade and into 2012 with a third of the rigs.
Yeah.
So the amount of pollution attributed to the drilling and the support through vehicle traffic was down considerably, but the number of holes remained pretty much the same.
Yeah. I want to get to a question that Paul Solotroff brought up about Utah, as he put it, Utah's political apparatus and their inclination, he charges anyway, to look the other way. But let me begin with something that he mentioned, because he mentioned you particularly, leveled a few charges at you in his article. I wanted to give you a chance to respond, because he refers to a report from the New York Times. This was when you were the head of the BLM in Vernal. And the New York Times reported that industry executives, oil and gas industry executives, had tried to block this BLM environmental study that would have examined the connection between extraction and in the Tri-County area. You were head of the BLM in Vernal, and according to the Times, there's some inclination that you had helped industry, quote, kill the BLM study and replace it with one backed by the oil and gas industry. Do you want to respond to that? Because that was one of the charges he leveled at you in his article.
Absolutely. The study to be conducted was actually my idea. That was a notion that when I moved up here from Moab, I saw what was going on in the Uinta Basin, and I had been involved with the minerals industry for most of my career. The Vernal Field Office was wildly outside of what had been anticipated by the standard practices in BLM. And when I say that, what I mean is this. When a planning document is done and you lay the course for the next 20 years, then you take a guess. The BLM takes a guess based on public input and from industry what they expect to see and do over the next 15 or 20 years. The industry provides you with the number of wells they think they're going to drill and in some cases where they're going to drill them. The BLM does a mineral report that says where occurrences are likely to happen, and some numbers are assigned, a high, a middle, and a low level, of say this is what's going to happen so that you can establish a level of impact for analysis in an environmental impact statement. When I got up here, it was very clear that the level of activity that was expressing itself in Vernal was well outside of what was in place and what was also had been predicted for the new rounds of planning. And so I approached our state office, our state director, our minerals director in the state office and said, we really need to do a supplemental environmental impact statement or NEPA document to account for all the new activity above and beyond what we had expected. That was my position coming into the Vernal Field Office. That can be substantiated by many levels. What happened from there is it convinced two different state directors to do this. We ended up with a meeting. There was resistance from the industry saying, we don't need to do that. We've got an EIS coming in the planning document. We got all the way to our Washington office, and the deputy director at that time did not support doing the additional documentation.
So it wasn't you killing
absolutely
it.
Not. That it was my idea.
Let me shift to another contention. And we're running out of time here, so I wanted to get you to respond, though, to Paul Solotaroff, who says that your time in office with the BLM in Vernal coincided with a boom in drilling permits in the area. What do you say to that?
The boom was occurring when I got here.
Right.
what happened was the numbers were coming in, but also, as I mentioned to Paul, that we had a bigger backlog than the number of permits that were being approved. The number of permits approved is not really a up to me.
Right.
In fact, what it comes down to is we were at one point the Vernal Field Office was maybe approving 800 permits a year, of which only about 2/3 ever get drilled, and there was a backlog of nearly 2,000 permits. And the BLM, myself, the BLM Field Office were receiving pressure from the Office of Management and Budget, the industry, and the administration to say, why do we have such a backlog? You're supposed to have these things approved within 30, 60, 90 days, and we had most of them were going out months and months or years. So the process was followed to the letter. That kept the permits from being approved willy-nilly. They were approved only
when they
according
went through the process.
To process.
Yeah. Final question, about a minute left. One of the strongest charges Paul Solotaroff makes in his article is that people employed by the state are being told or urged to stay away from or not initiate studies to make a connection between oil and gas development and adverse birth outcomes. That's a very serious charge. Can you respond to it, that the state's looking the other way, in fact, maybe even being told to look the other way?
Absolutely ludicrous. Not, to my knowledge, Uinta County in particular is leading the way in providing funding for the study. Uinta County's not doing it. We provided funding to the BLM, provided funding to USU, encouraging the continued study. The answer is not to any of this, is not to pretend it's not there or cover it up. The answer is to find out what is going on and then take the steps to fix it. Not guess and not pretend that it's not there, but do meaningful research, see what's wrong, if anything, and what is the best way to fix it.
Uinta County Commissioner Bill Stringer. He joined us today from his office in Uinta County. Commissioner, thank you very much for taking the time.
Absolutely, Doug. Thank you.
We'll take another quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are exploring that question of what caused a spike in 2013 of infant deaths in Vernal, Utah. Earlier this month, a reporter for Rolling Stone magazine joined us to explain why he didn't think the matter had been settled, and he raised a number of questions that we're exploring today. Joining us now on the program, and I should mention that we asked a representative from the Utah Department of Health to join us on the program. They couldn't because of a scheduling conflict. The Department of Health referred us to Jeremy Tubbs, who joins us now. She's a public information officer for the Tri-County Health Department. That she provides they provide health services to Duchesne, Uinta, and Daggett counties. The Utah Department of Health study on adverse birth outcomes was conducted in cooperation with this department. And Jeremy Tubbs is speaking to us from her office in Vernal also. And Jeremy Tubbs, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Doug. Nice to be here.
Let's begin with one of the questions that I asked earlier of Seth Lyman, and that is what seems to be, from Paul Solotaroff's perspective, the limitations of science, that epidemiology, the arc of science takes so many years, and any responsible scientist would be reluctant to make a connection before they can prove it. But advocates and others are saying, look, something needs to be done in the meantime. If these anomalies seem to be occurring and there is some reason for concern, something should be done. How do you respond to that, the limits of science, the fact that it's glacial in its pace and maybe should be?
Well, we have to, you know, explore this data first, the statistical review, and that helps us to determine if we find anything solid to where we would want to look at causal factors. And if nothing jumps to the forefront, then there's really no reason to expend the time and energy into causal studies.
So that does sort of segue into a principal concern of some activists. Paul Solitaroff in particular mentioned that, and that is that the study that was conducted wasn't looking for a causal link, that they weren't looking at environmental factors. Explain why that is. You just wanted to establish that there was a problem first. We'll get to causal connections later.
Yeah, you need to look at, the reason for doing a statistical review is it helps us to see if we have some trends developing to where we would want to look at delving further. Because if, we identify that there isn't a problem, we're not going to expend the time and energy, if it was available, the resources, to look at causal factors, which is, and obviously Mr. Lefevre's office, that the epidemiologist that did this, study.
This is Sam Lefevre.
Yes, right. They had funding to be able to take on a project like this already in place. So we were able to, after we got the approval from our Board of Health, we were able to go forward exploring the allegations that were put forth by our local midwife.
Yeah. Is it expensive? A causal, trying to find that causal link, is that require, must be massive in terms of resources and people,
yes,
and money.
Yes, as I understand it, yes, it would be.
Let me ask you, Paul Solitaroff and others are asking why the study, why would you lump Vernal in with the two other counties as was done? Why not just, if this is coming from a midwife in Vernal who thinks she's found some significant trend here, why not just study Vernal? Why do you fold in Duchesne? Why do you fold in Daggett?
Well, the three counties make up our local health district. We also have two hospitals here in our area, one in Vernal, one in Roosevelt, so one in each county. And we needed to have a specific number of births to be able to have kind of an apples-to-apples comparison with the data that the state had, so that we could look at whether we're above or below the state norms. So by using the whole area together, even then we still had to do three years worth of data,
right,
lumped together in order to match that.
So you're saying that such a limited number of people and a limited number of years, that isn't really that helpful. It doesn't have the statistical power really to say much of anything. You've got to broaden and widen your scope if you're going to learn anything.
Correct. And even, in the overall study, that's something that was brought up, is that we just don't have the numbers, the population here, to be able to look at large-scale studies.
So it could not be done, you don't think, that you could just look at one small section to see if it had a connection? Because some say that all that does is dilute the numbers, and it seems more like a blip than a cluster. So it can never be done that you could just focus on one small population like Vernal itself. You'd have to make it wider. You'd have to broaden it.
Right, and that's something. We had a community meeting before the study began, and it was open to the public. And in that meeting, we established the parameters of how we would look at the data. And that was part of the conversation, was just looking at individual mainstream towns, such as Vernal and Roosevelt, the two, big epicenters of the basin. And you'd be looking at, 10 years' worth of data, possibly, in one lump versus the 3 years if we combined them.
Mm.
And so it would be hard, where the allegation was, 1 year that we had this spike in stillborns, you'd have to stretch so far. You'd span such a huge amount of time, it was just decided that we would encompass the whole health district,
right,
and that way we only had to look at a three-year span.
Let's set aside for a moment the connection between adverse, birth outcomes and the oil and gas industry. Can we say the pollution in the Uinta Basin area has negative effects on pregnant mothers, that this pollution is, as some are worried, is impairing the neurology of babies, causing developmental disorders? Does everyone seem to agree about that fact?
Not in the statistical review.
Hmm.
And that's, what I'm speaking for is we just looked at simply the birth and death records that were provided by the registries run by the state from 1991 to 2013. and you just have to go off what is listed, you know, on the death records as the cause of death in infants up to 1 year of age. So we're not looking at anything causal at all.
No, I know, but here's the question. It sounds like what you're saying is the study, which is, was not looking at causal, it was just looking to see if there was something statistically significant. What the study found was it's not statistically significant. So what that seems to be telling you is there's no reason to go in and look for a causal link because there's no significance here statistically.
At this time, that is correct.
So there's no effort to look further. You're just, the matter is settled as far as you're concerned right now.
We will revisit this in 2 years. When we have another cluster of data, and then again in four, because as a health department, we have some programs in place to help people with what we did flesh out, such as you've spoken before, the rate of smoking in the homes, birth weights of mothers, diabetes, things that as a health department and as a medical community that we can help people with if they're interested. And so we'll be able to go back and revisit that and see if efforts and programs that are available to people can make a difference. And that's where our focus as a health department is.
Yeah. So there is something unique about Vernal in the sense that it does seem, this was a question I put earlier to Seth Lyman, mothers in Vernal seem more inclined to smoke while they're pregnant or certainly be exposed to secondhand smoke. Is that a fair conclusion?
Yes, we do have the highest smoking mothers rate in the state.
And they're more inclined to be younger than the average in terms of giving birth?
Yes, we have, the teen mothers, that is also high in our area.
And tend to be more overweight maybe than others or more vulnerable to like things like type 2 diabetes, those kinds of things.
Yes, that was an interesting factor that was fleshed out during the study is that that does play a considerable role.
What is the quality of prenatal care for these women then? I'm guessing if you don't want to bunch them into any sort of a class or culture, but lacking in education, it seems, on some level, lacking in some kind of sophistication maybe in terms of their attention to health care and those kinds of things. Do we know anything about the quality of prenatal care?
We have a program that's new that we're working with these mothers, prenatal and also postnatal visits to make sure that they're getting the care that they need because that's one of the factors that we found is, you know, women who aren't accessing that care. And so we are actually putting steps in place trying to solidify relationships with locally with the doctors so that if they're seeing women that aren't coming, you know, that have expressed they want to come in but they can't afford it because they lack insurance, then they can refer to us to the what's called the Baby Your Baby program. We also have the Women, Infants, and Children program where we can look at the weight gains and assist with nutritional education and supplemental foods for pregnant mothers so that they can have a healthier diet while they're pregnant and watching that weight so that we can, you know, help them to monitor as they go and looking for those flags for diabetes and also making sure that they're getting into those doctors, you know, asking them, have you been in for any prenatal care so that any women who might be falling through the cracks who don't have access to services, that we can hopefully guide them to those services. And we would hope that that would improve outcomes.
So it sounds like you're focused on the mothers. What about the industry? Do you have a strategy for the pollution caused by the oil and gas industry? I mean, surely you see that as having an impact on the health of mothers in Vernal and the Uinta Basin.
Not within the programs that we have that are in our scope. We're just looking at the health and also in the homes. We also have another program that we work with.
I know, but why? Why don't you have a program to take into account the impacts of oil and gas industry? Why not?
You have to have funding to run a program from somewhere, and we don't have that.
So, but you do have funding to deal with the health behavior of young mothers. You do have that, but not for a strategy to deal with the oil and gas industry. It's because that's bigger in scope. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I really couldn't speak to that as far as because there could potentially be, small areas that we could, but there is some funding that we have or relationships that we have with monitoring air and things like that. But, right now it's what we have funding for, the programs that are funded, that's what we can work with.
Yeah. Does that worry you? You don't have the funding? I mean, this should be a component, you would think. I mean, yes, the risky behaviors of mothers is one issue, but industry is also, I mean, I think everyone agrees. Does that worry you that you don't have the funding for it? That's not a part of the focus.
Not really at this time. I mean, the industry kind of, there are other, the Division of Environmental Quality, Division of Air Quality, they have that funding available to them, and they have their programs that oversee things like that. So, we're kind of in our niche over here, working in conjunction with those other divisions, of course. But
right. Do you expect there to be any new data coming? It sounds like, again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, that the study didn't find any statistical significance. Therefore, there's no reason to really create another one. I guess you don't anticipate a new wave of data that may tell you something different.
Well, we did agree that we will revisit this in 2 years, and take another cluster of data, and that will help us to see, are we developing a trend or was this an anomaly?
Right. So it may be too early to say, I suppose.
Yes.
Great. Okay.
But like I said, we do plan to revisit it in both 2 years and 4 years. And see if we see the needle moving, which way, up or down.
Right.
To whether we'll know if there's a trend that needs our attention or if this was just a spike and then it's come back down, as it has done in years before.
Right. Okay. Jeremy Tubbs, Public Information Officer for the Tri-County Health Department, joined us from our office in Vernal. Thanks very much for taking the time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Technical direction from Tim Slover today. The program produced by Lane Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.